Good afternoon again. For those of you who don't know who I am, I'm Peter Himschoot. I work for UTU. And in this session, I'm going to talk mainly about HTML5 features. I'm not going to give you an extensive list of what's available in HTML5. I'm going to pick out a couple of topics. So, UTU is a training company based in Brussels. Yeah, I've been following Twitter, by the way, and some of you think I have a, what was it, Russian accent? I'm very sorry. I could try to talk more English-like, but I think it sounds horrible coming from me. So I hope you will endure. So what about HTML5? What is all the fuss about? So what I want to talk about is a couple of things, like why is HTML5 so much better? Well, it isn't. It's just an evolution of HTML. We're going to look at a couple of things like working with Canvas, doing your own custom drawing with Canvas in case you're interested in building a game like Cut the Rope. On the internet, there's a very nice article on how they ported Cut the Rope from the iPad to HTML5. So really worth the read. We're going to talk a little bit about local storage, how to save some of your data on the client instead of putting them into cookies. We're going to look at geolocation. We're also going to look at taking an application offline. And then we're going to look at playing video and audio without requiring to have things like Flash and Silverlight. Okay. So what is, what is that HTML5 all about? Well, they did a couple of things. First of all, they made HTML5 easier to work with. They made HTML5 a lot more richer content-wise, and they made HTML5 more powerful by adding more things like specific JavaScript extensions. So there's better support for JavaScript. For example, what makes HTML5 easier to use? Well, this thing. See that? The doc type? The string doesn't even fit on my slide. It's so long. Why is it so long? Because there are so many different variants of HTML. So they said, hey, you know what? We're going to stop being very precise. We're going to allow people to just say, I'm HTML5. So in HTML5, it's easy. You just say doc type, HTML, and all that other stuff is no longer necessary. Who's doing XHTML5 anyway? Some people. Okay. Now, if you want to do that, perfect. But HTML5 is very liberal. So if you want to, well, be, you know, quirky, you can still do so. Now, what we also get is a lot more richer semantics. What it means is you get elements like header, footer, you get things like section, article, aside. Why is it so important? Well, first of all, without those things, what do you use? What are the typical tags you're going to use to say, hey, this is going to be a header, this is going to be a footer? You're going to be using divs. Okay. Now, imagine you have very bad eyesight, or you're even blind. How are you going to surf the web? Well, you're going to use special software that is going to parse the HTML and is going to read to you special stuff. Now, if it just sees a div, it can only look at some hints like header and footer. Now, what if you build that website and you're not using header or footer, you use something else? This tool is going to make it very hard for people to read that. Now, with this richer semantic, with these richer semantic elements like article and section, you can give somebody who has disabilities way more interesting ways of reading, because now he can simply say, go to the next section, politics. Go to the next article in that section. Well, there's an article on Berlusconi. Okay, come on. Last couple of years, he's been in the newspaper all each week, right? No, okay. So by doing that, you make stuff better for people who have visual disability, but it's also going to be better for you, because these things, like article, they've been intended to be kind of copy-paste. So you could have a database of articles, and then you could decide where you want to use those articles. It is really a kind of mini HTML on its own right. So in that article, you can use header and footer again if you want. See? So it makes it a lot richer. By the way, I almost forgot to give you maybe the most important reason why you should start using HTML5. Anybody has been using Windows 8? Have you tried the browser in Windows 8 itself, the Metro browser? And then you go to Silverlight website. What happens? No Silverlight. No Flash. It's going to they're turning it into an iPad. So if you want to have some of those special abilities like playing video, you really have to go HTML5 now. Are you familiar with, of course, everybody knows YouTube, but on YouTube, there's this special section where you can say, give me everything HTML5. So if you want to use your iPad, or you want to use the Windows 8 mobile, you want to use the browser from Windows 8, you'll have to switch to YouTube HTML5 anyway. So another reason to do that. Okay. Now, let's have a look at, well, probably the most popular element in HTML5, Canvas. Why? Of course, it's all about building games. You've seen things like Cut the Rope. You've seen Pirates Love Daisies. I hope it's this one. So this is, again, a game completely written in HTML5. And all the drawing here is being done on a canvas. If you actually look at the source, which is, well, something easy you can do now, you will see it's all about canvas. Now, I'm not going to talk about building a game like this. But let's have a look let's have a look behind the scenes. So, what is canvas? Canvas is nothing but an HTML element that makes it very easy to draw on top of. It's a resolution-dependent bitmap on which you can draw things. You can draw images. It has a very simple markup. It's just canvas. And then, if your browser does not support canvas, whatever is in there is going to be rendered. By the way, if you want to use canvas on an older browser, there are some very nice JavaScript libraries around that allow you to emulate canvas. So the only difference is going to be performance. So once you get this canvas, you can start drawing on top of that. And the way you're going to do that is by using a context. You need a drawing context. So if you look at the code here, what I'm doing is I'm getting my canvas. Yes, and I'm not using jQuery in this case. And I'm going to get the context, and I can ask it, can I please have a 2D context? Some browsers actually support the 3D context. In the future, we're going to see that more and more of that. But for the moment, all browsers support 2D. And then on that 2D, you can start doing drawing. That drawing is conceptually very easy. What you're going to do is you're going to say, okay, I want you to move to this position. I want to draw a line to this position. I want you to draw a rectangle. I want you to draw an arc. I want you to draw an image. All of those typical drawing primitives are available. And the way you're going to do that is you're going to just draw, and then you're going to ink. So in all of these things, you typically will see two phases, where somebody is drawing stuff, and then we're selecting like a pen. I want to have a color, I want to have a thickness, and then we draw. The way you do that is by using the stroke style, which is very much like the style you find in CSS. And then when you call stroke, it's actually going to draw. Now, a little bit of advice here. If you want to draw a line, you will always have to make sure that you draw a line like at a half boundary, because if you don't do so, Canvas will always do anti-aliasing. So if you want to have crystal sharp lines, you kind of want to make sure that you're always drawing like draw a line x 0.5 to 1.5 if you want to have a line 1 pixel wide. It's a quirk, okay. By the way, if you're familiar with Anybody here ever done any C++ development with MFC or stuff like that? Well, if you've done that, you had to draw on the device context. Canvas, fairly similar the way you do things. So you just get basic drawing primitives. So, what's the demo? Well, what I wanted to do here is kind of have a little game. So what I have, and I'm going to resize that a little bit more, I have this little game which is four in a row. But of course, since I'm using beer, I'm going to have a game called Four in a Brew. And what we're going to do is we're going to use the tops of a certain beer, which I like very much. Anybody recognize this beer? Well, there are two brands I'm using here. No? It's a bottle which is like brown and speckled and has a blue top. Delirium Tremens. So I had fun building this thing, you know why? I bought some beer and then I took pictures of the tops. And then, of course, I had to open up the beer and drink it. And it's not such a bad job I have, you know. But I can work with this. So what I'm doing here is I'm basically drawing all of this stuff. So let me show you a little bit of the code behind this. Actually, if you're going to show you the game view is really easy. What I'm doing here is I just have two image elements. They're actually being hidden, but these images are just a way to load the image in my page. Why? I'm going to be drawing with that image in a moment. And then I just have a canvas. And that canvas is just going to float left using CSS classes. And then, of course, I have some JavaScript behind that. So if I go to the game, which is actually quite a lot of JavaScript if you look at it. But on that, I'm really scrolling down, I'm really drawing a board. And drawing that board is fairly easy. What I'm doing here is I'm just drawing horizontal lines. I'm just drawing vertical lines. So for each line, I'm doing a move to. I'm doing a line to. I'm kind of drawing everything. And then at the end, I'm picking red. I'm picking a line which is one wide. And then again here, you see the coordinates. I'm going from a half to a half plus my new position. And then I'm calling stroke. And then the next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to walk over all the pieces on my board and I'm calling draw on them. So what I did here is I built a little JavaScript object called piece. And in that JavaScript object I have a draw method, and that draw method simply draws the image, which is one of the caps I had. Just draws it in the right spot. And that's quite easy. You just use draw image and you give it an image. And this is just an image tag. So if you want to draw in a view, you have two choices. You can either have the image hidden somewhere or maybe even in plain view. You can then simply draw with that or you can dynamically load that image. I opted for the first way of doing that. So drawing on a canvas, it is a matter of a lot of patience, making things work the way you want, but basically it's fairly easy. I'm just drawing on the context with an image, and then lower down, I'm just drawing lines. Of course, you can go way beyond that. You can draw things like Bezier curves. Now, if you want to do hit detection, you're also going to have a lot of work, of course, because Canvas does not help you there. So what I also have is when somebody clicks, let's go and have a look for the clip. Where is that? Here is I'm actually simply going using jQuery. jQuery makes it easy to do this because in your event object, you can actually simply ask what's the offset of the mouse cursor in my current element. So I'm just saying, give me the current element. It's going to give me offset X. I'm calculating from that which column I'm in on the game board, and then I just drop a stone. So again, this can be a lot of work. If you want to avoid that, of course, you have the option of going for SVG. If you're familiar with SVG, it's just an XML format for building drawing primitives, and these are also perfectly supported by browsers. So, and then the advantage there is these are real objects, and if you click on them, they're actually going to raise their own click event. So it's a different way of doing things. But Canvas here, it's very powerful. Again, cut the rope. You saw that, it's completely Canvas. Yeah, the hardest work they had, well, as they said in the article, was building the physics engine. Canvas gave them everything they needed to do all the rest. Okay. So again, if I hit here, it just drops these things, and these are simply caps images. Images of the top of a bottle. Okay. Now, once I have that game, of course, I might like to be able to continue a game later on. By the way, I'm going to be using this game later when we look at WebSockets to make this into a multiplayer game. For the moment, I can just play against myself, or two people could be playing behind the same PC. The next session, we're going to look at WebSockets to make that truly a multiplayer game. But first, what if I quit my game? I want to save stuff to disk. Now, if you're building a typical Windows application, life is easy. In a Windows application, you can just use the disk. It's there for you to use. Of course, not everything might be available because of security, but you can generally just fill up the whole disk if you want. If you have a web application, that becomes hard. Currently, what do you get? You get cookies. Now, cookies are limited in size. Cookies have a lot of disadvantages. They have to travel between the client and the server. So they decided to build local storage. Actually, this kind of mechanism is very similar to what you will find in isolated storage in things like Silverlight and .NET. Actually, local storage is an abstraction away from that, because if you use local storage, you don't even need to know there's a disk. So, what is local storage? It's nothing but a dictionary in which you can store strings with a string key. Actually, what is going to happen is going to take those strings, is going to save them on disk. They are automatically persisted, but you get an upper limit. You get an upper limit of 5 megabyte. Okay, so that's a disadvantage. Can you go higher? No. If you want to go higher, HTML5 also gives you file APIs. So with file APIs, you can say, hey, I want to save this 10 megabyte file on disk. But even there are limits imposed by your browser. Now, the cool thing about this storage is it's always stored on the client. So even if you shut down your machine, it just keeps on going. And what you can also do is you can enable change tracking. Imagine I want to open up two tabs, one tab for each player, and I want to make them play to one another. I can then use local storage to communicate between those tabs. So if I save something in local storage, another tab can pick up on that and then use that to display whatever happened. So it's also available. Using local storage is really, really easy. Like I said, local storage, it's just a dictionary. So if you want to add an item, you can use the set item method. If you want to get an item, guess what? You can just do this get item. By the way, there's an easier way in which you just use indexers. So not that much. Now, in real life, you're of course not going to be storing strings in there. You're going to be storing JSON objects. Again, JSON is kind of the standard way of doing things with the web these days. So if I want to put stuff in there, it's easy. By the way, what about tracking changes? Well, if you have local storage, you can actually ask the window, could you tell me when there's a storage event? So what you can do is you can say, window, tell me when there's a storage event. And that will then call this method, and in the method you can actually figure out what was modified in storage. You're going to get a key in local storage which was modified, and then again you can react to that. So local storage is a really easy mechanism. Actually, all these HTML5 APIs, they all shine in their simplicity, which means that it might actually end up you doing more work. But if I want to, I can easily track somebody adding something to local storage in another tab, and I can just get this. Okay, some people are wondering Will this work between two different browsers? Of course not. Each browser has their own way of implementing this. And for the moment, there is no standard on how it should react if there's another browser using that same local storage. So again, in my demo, what I did is when I'm playing the game, I probably want to have an easy way to save where the game is. And saving the game is really easy. What I have is I have a board object. This board is really nothing but an array of piece objects. So what I'm asking, JSON, could you please stringify this board for me? And I just save it in local storage beneath this key. Now, things become a little bit more interesting when I try to load. But first, I'm also checking if local storage is available. So I'm just saying if window has local storage. I could have used Modernizer to do this. But local storage is so easy, why should I use Modernizer if I can just check this way? If I end up starting a new game, what's going to happen? It's going to call this method, which is going to try to load a game. Again, I'm going to check for local storage. If that is available, and in local storage I actually find a saved game, I'm going to try to load that. When I get that game, I'm going to get this into a temporary array. But there's a little catch. This is not an array of piece objects. This is an array of JavaScript objects, but the thing that is missing there is my draw method. So if I'm going to use this, and maybe I should just put a breakpoint here. I forgot something. I forgot to add the method where I want to call this, so one moment, please. So if I'm going to create a new game, I'm going to call this method. And as you can see, the Visual Studio allows you to debug JavaScript. I can't do it with the browser debugger. I can do it just here. But if I load this game, it should hit that breakpoint. Come on, refresh. Did I forget something? Yeah, browsers and their caching. Come on. Okay, I think I'm using the wrong browser. Could that be it? Okay, sorry. I'm just going to kill all of this stuff and rerun again. And hopefully it's going to... okay, so if I try this, if I step into this, it's going to... I knew I forgot something. What just happened? I'm using Internet Explorer 10 first preview. What I should do is actually should use the second preview. Second preview actually has support for local storage. So the idea is in IE 10, you're going to get full support for that. Come on. Waiting. Did it hit the breakpoint? Yeah, I'm sorry, I think I will have to use the built-in debugger for this one, which unfortunately has a tiny, tiny little... Okay. One more, and then I'm going to give up if I don't get this to work now. Go back to script, go here. Thing is, what I want to show you, that if I get this out of here, this if I get my temporary variable out of here, come on. I don't have anything stored. That's what's wrong. Okay, let's store that. I'm having a bad demo day. I forgot another thing. I need to call this method, right? Okay. One more attempt. Thank you for being patient. So if I play this game, I'm going to get a couple of moves in here. And if I'm now going to attach the debugger. Pom pom. I should be able to show you what's wrong. Okay, I'm there. Aha. So, if I step into this, what I'm going to get is a bunch of temporary objects. And again, if you see here, I'm getting three things. I'm getting the column, I'm getting the row, I'm getting the player. But what's missing if I'm going to use this object? It doesn't have a draw method. So, if I'm going to save stuff, I'm going to lose all the functionality. So what I'm doing here is I'm just using this jQuery map method, and I'm going to show you that on this screen. I'm using the jQuery map functionality to walk through the array, and the array is actually turning it back into a bunch of piece objects. So when you send stuff to local storage, you have to be very careful. When you get it back out, it loses its type. And it's not like normal serialization, so I need to convert that back into a full object. But now, if I keep on going with this, if I move away, and I come back, forget about that, no. If I come back, it just remembers where it was. Okay, so that's the whole idea here. And if I win the game, it just resets and remembers that somebody won this game. So again, if I hit this. So putting stuff, local storage, again, really easy because it's nothing but a simple dictionary. Which brings me to another sensitive subject, geolocation. What I also wanted to do on my little beer site is to add functionality where somebody is somewhere in the world and they say, hey, I feel like visiting a brewery today. Show me where are the breweries. That requires me to have two things. First of all, it requires me to have knowledge about breweries, but that's easily solved. I can put that in a server. I could use Google or Bing or whatever. But I also need to know where the current user is. So HTML5 added that. HTML5 saw that all mobile devices these days have very good support for knowing where you are. Even portables have that today. So with geolocation, I can easily figure out where I am. Again, it's a very easy API, and it's going to give you some information. It's definitely going to give you the latitude and the longitude. If you want, you can also ask for things like how high are you? You can actually get that too, altitude. You get to get things like heading. Some actually will give you speed. So this API, you have to be very careful with it because if you call it, you're going to get information, but you're not sure about what kind of information you're going to get. Actually, what geolocation is going to do is going to look through a couple of mechanisms. But first, it's going to ask you, dear user, are you happy to give your location to that website? So it's going to ask for consent. And each browser does that slightly differently. And it's not that important, but again, you have to think about that. Because if you're going to build a website, the user might say no. And then you will have to have a gracious way of handling that. So, how is it going to determine your location? Well, depending on hardware, it might try to figure out where you are using GPS. If your hardware has GPS, you're probably going to get a very good estimate what your position is. If not, it's going to try to use cell tower. It's going to, if you have a mobile, it's going to try to triangulate where are the different cell towers and then try to figure your position out from that. If it cannot do that, it's going to look for wireless connections. Actually, a couple of years ago, there was a couple of students, they built a little mobile application that was using wireless access points to do triangulation for in a hospital. Really cool idea. And if that doesn't work, it's going to try to figure it out from the IP address. Now, you know how exact the IP address is going to be, right? If I'm going to run the demo, I might actually end up in Mechelen. Or whatever. So it's kind of, well, you have to again think about that. So the lower you go, the lower the precision is going to be. So how does it work? Well, it's really easy. You just say, give me the current position. The navigator object in your browser typically has a geolocation. Again, you can check for that using things like Modernizer. You say, give me the position, and then when it figures out the position, it's going to call another method, and in that method, you just get a location object. And in that location object, you get altitude, longitude, latitude, and some other information. You can actually ask it if you want to have high precision. So the third argument, this options argument, allows you to say, I want to have high precision. And of course, if the user says no, or it cannot determine position, it's going to call another method, this show error method, that's going to, well, I'll show you in a moment. So if I want to do show position, I can then just ask, for example, virtual Earth, show me that position. Fairly basic code. I'm going to be honest with you. This morning I arrived, the first thing I did was try this. Would it be able to figure out the position from the internet provider? And it didn't. So I said, that's not going to be a very nice demo. So what I'm doing here now is, maybe it will work, maybe it will not. That's always the question. But I'm going to show you a map. It's going to automatically center on this space. And if it can find the location, it's going to move to the other location where it thinks I am. But if not, it's going to, by default, go here. For that, I'm going to use my map JavaScript. It's not that much JavaScript, by the way. Maybe I should also show you the view first. On the view, I'm not doing a lot. I'm actually downloading the Virtual Earth API, which is a JavaScript library. Okay? I'm also downloading my JavaScript. And then here, I have a little div, which I can use to show if there's an error. And I have another div, which I'm going to use to show the map. And then in my JavaScript, what I'm doing here is, first of all, I figured out the position of TechDays. You know, it's really easy these days, you know. Right? How do you figure out what is the latitude and the longitude of something? Interested? Bah. Well, what you do is, you just go, take your favorite browser, you go to maps.live.com, you look for where you are, So when it finds that, you just position this map wherever you want. You put it nicely in the middle, like this. You open up the debugger. You go to the script debugger. You go to the watch window, and you say, map, get center. And then here, you get the position. You get the latitude and the longitude. Is that easy? Okay, in case you ever want to figure out the position of something, you want to get those coordinates, really easy. Yeah. Sorry? Well, I tried that, but in my case, I can do center, but what's here? Come on. I looked for this for a while and couldn't figure it out, so I decided to go the other way. Maybe if there's a better way. Maybe Google Maps has a better way, but I looked for several and I didn't find one. If anybody knows a better way, I have a T-shirt waiting for you, if you want one. Yeah, but after the session. Sometimes. Okay, so what I'm doing here is I'm getting the TechDays position, I'm loading the map, this is really easy, the Virtual Earth API is really easy. What I'm also doing, by the way, is I'm going back to my server, I'm asking it, give me a list of all the breweries that you know about. So then I get a bunch of breweries, I'm actually walking through each brewery, which is going to then create a position again. I'm going to create a pin, and I'm just going to put it on the map. Okay. And then the real stuff happens. So what I'm doing here is I have this method, which is going to show the location. And when this works, I'm going to load the map on that new location. And actually, I should make sure that I do this. The map I already have. If it doesn't work, this method is going to get called, and then I can easily figure out what went wrong. These things are defined as constant in JavaScript. So if I didn't get the permission from the user, I can tell the user, sorry, I need your permission. If it cannot find the position, I'm just going to say, sorry, can't get the position. If I get a timeout, I'm just going to say something else. By the way, in my options, I can tell this thing if I want to have high accuracy, and then I just call this thing. So if I'm lucky, I'll end up in this method. If I'm unlucky, I'll end up in this method. Okay. So let's try. So if I go to my BS and I go to the where, it's going to load that map. Yeah. Okay. Actually, this is good news because what happened here is it used the old version, which had that little bug, but I'm actually getting there. So let's try that again, but let's make the browser lose the cached version of the script. So, yeah. I'm going to get the error again, but I still need to clear the cache. Come on. Did I... should have known that. You know what? I'm going to build it just to make sure. Well, actually, what I really like about the new Visual Studio, well, 2010, you also have something like this, but if I use the web, I can easily tell it, deploy it immediately in IIS. So it actually goes immediately to IIS. I didn't even need to figure that one out. Okay, one more try. But now, Control-click, refresh. So it found that we're here. Whoa, where is that? It looks like a train station. Anybody recognize the train station? Is that one from here? I didn't come by train, so. Okay. Come on. Anybody recognize it? Yeah? Okay. So, geolocation actually is not that hard. The thing is, you have to be very careful because you might get bogus information. Okay. Which then brings me to offline. So, what's the whole idea? Sometimes you have a website and you want to make sure that that website is still available even if people don't have an internet connection. It's really cool if you have that with a game. I imagine I want to play some Cut the Rope, but I'm in the plane, so there's no internet. If I want to start that, it might still work. The only thing is, with these offline kind of applications, the browser needs to remember all the stuff instead of always going for the internet. To do that, they decided to add something called the application cache. The application cache is nothing but a cache, a browser cache, that keeps track of all the files that make up your website. The thing is, you have to opt into this mechanism. You actually have to describe to the browser, these are the files you can keep and reuse and reuse and reuse. Actually, when you do that, even if you have an internet connection, the browser will generally attempt to take the version that is in the browser. So it might make things a lot faster. It doesn't even need to check if there's a new version. What it is going to do is going to check if the manifest file, the file that contains the stuff that you want to keep track of, hasn't been updated. Okay. So what you're going to get is a manifest. And in that manifest, you're going to describe two things. The stuff you want to keep, the stuff you don't want to keep. I'm going to warn you, by the way, this manifest file has to have a specific MIME type. If you want to use this with static files, for example, you have to make sure you don't forget to add to your web server the text cache manifest MIME type. Okay. So, To make files, to make your website offline, you do two things. You create a file like this. In that file, you list all the items you want. And then you refer to that file on your HTML element. And the way you do that is by just saying manifest is this file. Now, of course, nobody likes updating a file like that. So, MVC4, if I want, I can make it generate that file. So, that's what I decided to do. But first, before I show you, there's some other stuff you can do. You can give it fallbacks. Imagine there's a video on your website and you don't want to have that video cached. You can then tell the system, hey, when I'm offline, I want you to not show the video, I just want you to show this little placeholder image I have. So if you have large content, your site will still work. People just won't be able to view the video, they'll just be able to watch a pretty picture. Actually, the browser can also tell you whether you're going online or offline. So if you want to detect, you can do two things. First of all, you can ask the navigator, are we online? So navigator online, which is true when you're online. And you can also register for an event, the online and the offline events, which will trigger when the browser gets a connection or loses the connection. So again, this is basically very simple. You have a property to check and you have an event to listen to. Now let's have a look at doing this kind of offline stuff. So, what I have, again, on my beer controller, and some people found that quite funny. Well, I have to admit, it's kind of funny. What I'm going to have here is, again, a simple action application cache. And on my website, I'm going to be using that. So, if I go to the master page, this one, I can tell the system to use that. So I'm just telling it, hey, the manifest is behind this action. So it's going to call beer application cache as an action. And then, of course, I have the view. The view is this. I'm adhering to the file format, but instead of putting hard-coded URIs in here, I'm just using URL content. I'm using the helper class to get, for example, access to my CSS, to my JavaScript, maybe to my video, maybe to my images. What I'm actually doing here is I'm just walking through all the images that I have in that website, and I'm dynamically adding them by just using Razor. Then, of course, I have a fallback, so I have this little video here. I'm going to say everything within this folder, everything within the video folder, I want you to use this placeholder of a picture of some beer. So, again, this stuff will be cached. This stuff will not be cached, but it will be faked. And then I can also tell it, never cache this stuff. And what's behind this? These are the actions that are returning JSON. So I'm kind of saying, never cache that kind of stuff. Now, there's one last thing I needed to do here. I needed to make sure that I was using the right kind of MIME type. So I'm just saying here, return as the response text/cache manifest. Now, if I want to debug this, and if I want to see if this is actually working quite nicely, well, the best way to do that is using Chrome. So if I use Chrome for that, in the Chrome debugger, you actually get this nice listing of all the events. So here you see that it's actually caching. It's hitting my cache, and it's building the whole cache. And in the resources, you can then look at all the files that have been cached. Okay? Now, adding this kind of offline support, you have to be very careful with this. For example, in Google Chrome, it's kind of, well, sometimes you want to clear this stuff. It's not always that easy. Okay, if you want to make this clear, what you do is if you want to make sure that things get touched, you just touch this file. So the moment somebody touches this file, it gets a new timestamp, and then, of course, the browser like Google and Internet Explorer are going to refetch the manifest and then are going to look for all the new files again. So that way you can update. But sometimes, I've lost time after time because the caching was still getting the old stuff instead of getting the new stuff. So this is like super caching. Okay, which then brings me to, how should I say, the simplest topic of them all, playing video. So in HTML5 you get a video tag, you also get an audio tag which works exactly the same way. And with that video tag you can then tell it, play this video. The problem, however, is, if you look at different kind of browsers, each browser supports specific video formats. For example, Internet Explorer, by default, supports H.264. While if you use Chrome, Chrome by default uses VP8 and Vorbis. And then Firefox uses OGG. So if you want to support all of these browsers, you actually have to at least give three different file formats. Internet Explorer compatible file format, Firefox compatible file format, and WebKit compatible file format. How do you do that? Well, there are a lot of tools on the internet you can use for that. For example, what I like to use is Handbrake. Handbrake is a tool that will cross encode a movie from one to the other. So what I did yesterday is me and my son holding the camera and me pouring a pint of beer. He was doing that, and then I got it back into my in my machine. I then edited that video a little bit, and then I cross-encoded it for the three kind of formats. So I ended up with three videos. And let's have a look. I get this one, I get this one, I got this one. So three different formats. Org. This is the org. No. Yes, something funny is going on. I can't. If you look at the file types, you're going to see the different kind of extensions. Come on. Okay, I'll show you the code. So, if you're going to look at the video tag, this is the video view. What I have here is the H.264 version, the Chrome version, and the Firefox version. So you end up doing this for each kind of video. Now, they actually preview this. So what the video tag actually tries to do, it is going to download this video, and if it recognizes it, it's going to play it. And if it doesn't recognize it, it's going to go for this one. And if it doesn't recognize it, it goes for this one. Now, that's why you actually have to make sure you give it a type. The browser, it knows about the type it supports. So if you don't give it the type, it will download the first video, even if it cannot play it. If I'm going to run this on Firefox, for example, it's going to download the first two movies and both times say, hey, I don't understand this, and that's going to play the third movie. You're wasting a lot of bandwidth. So by doing this, you can tell it this is... you can just tell it about the different formats. Okay, so, by the way, okay, one little thing. If you want to do that with Visual Studio these days, you can get this code snippet that makes it really easy to add this kind of stuff. So you go here for video. I'm sure my colleagues showed you something like that. Come on, where's video? There it is. And you just type in some kind of file format. Again, I'm using MVC here, so I'm using the helper method again to point to where the video is instead of hard coding that in here. And now my premiere, my very first movie I'm showing to people. That's built. Let's go back here to the index. And then on the bottom, I have this link to a little video where I'm pouring another kind of beer from Heuge. Heuge. I know my accent. Heuge is right next to my door, that's why. I didn't get them to sponsor me, however, so... Sorry, am I?
Are you going to turn this in for the Oscars for next year?
Okay. If you also do one. Yeah. So, thing is, if you want to use video, be ready to transcode your video to the three major formats supported by all the browsers. So, here's a nice little list. So, if you do these three formats, all the browsers generally support one or the other. Again, which brings me to the end of the session. I didn't show you everything from HTML5. That would have been mission impossible. But the major thing is HTML5 makes developing for the web for certain things a lot easier. And it's all about doing a plugin-free browser experience. Why is it so important not to have any plugins in your browser? Well, it wouldn't be the first time that some plugin ruins the performance of your browser. Maybe you can think of one. I can think of one, but I'm not going to tell you because it's not nice. And you also get these new powerful APIs to work with that. I didn't show you how you can work with video, but video, again, exposes events like play, pause, stop. You can call those methods on it. So you get all that support. So again, if you want to later look back at this session, you want to find the slides, you will find it in on the top link. You'll be able to find everything there. Okay. So, again, I'm open for questions, and I'm still waiting for somebody to show me the easiest way to figure out the position instead of apparently my clumsy way of doing that. Okay? Thank you.